Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 13 for October 31st, 2006. GeekFest. Hey everybody, this is Alex Lindsay, and I'm stepping into Leo's very large shoes to host MacBreak Weekly this week, and I'm here joined from Chris Breen. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
It's Playlist, right?
It's PlaylistMag.com and MacWorld, yeah.
All of those things.
And so, all of those things, and I have noticed how enormous Leo's shoes are, because the man has feet like a flamingo.
Yeah, he's a very good swimmer. That's what I've heard. He's actually on a boat right now, and I think he's actually using those large feet to swim around in the ocean. And
They're like size 17. It's just remarkable, and you wouldn't know it looking at him on camera, but you'll notice they never pan down to his feet.
Yeah, it's very, he has them all custom made.
Yeah.
Also, Scott Bourne from iLive Zone and about 14 other websites. Can you list them all, Scott, quickly?
I could, but the problem is that I only have 42 and Merlin has 43, and until I have 43, I refuse to list them all.
There you go. Also, of course, Merlin Man, Merlin from 43folders.com. Hey, Merlin.
Hello, boys.
So we've got all kinds of news coming up this week in the Mac world. Now, the rumor is starting to pick up because we're getting close to the Intel being able to releasing these four core chips. Do we think that Apple is actually going to release an 8-core Mac Pro? Because right now they have a 4-proc. You know, it's a dual core Mac Pro. We've already seen there have been these guys that have already put together, they've tested some of these where the operating system clearly sees 8 cores. Do we think that Apple's going to do something this fall, or are they going to wait until Macworld? Chris,
I think they're going to wait, and I think they're going to wait because if we look back at what they just did with the MacBook Pro, where they put Core 2 Duos in those things, it wasn't that long ago that they came out with the MacBook Pro, and suddenly people are going, what? Wait a minute, I'm a processor behind? And the Mac Pros just came out. Now imagine that next month they come out with the bigger thing. So they've got the huge processors in there. And what happens to all those people who say, wait a minute, I really expect to have sort of be on top of the heap for at least 6 months instead of 3. So I think we're probably looking at something like when Leopard comes out, that this would be a nice package to say, hey, look, we got a new operating system and we've got this and it'll run everything. And you can do 70,000 things at the same time with these wonderful processors.
Now what we've also seen is you should be able to buy upgrades. Kit. So if you can't wait for Apple to do this, it does appear that you can get an upgrade. You'll be able to upgrade these to 8 processors. Those chips that are in your Mac Pro right now are upgradable. So it does look like it might be possible to move your Mac Pro up. No, does anyone here have a Mac Pro? No, nobody.
I do.
Nobody. You have one.
So, I do.
So do you think, are you thinking about upgrading it? Is that something you want? 8 processors?
I'm waiting for the 32 core quad triple whatever.
With 128 gigabytes of RAM.
Yeah, I'm looking for 64 processors and not one less than that.
Yeah, exactly. No, and this brings up another issue, which is that of course it's great to have 8 processors, but a lot of applications won't actually see 8 processors. Don't know exactly how to use them efficiently if they're not multi-threaded, and so it's questionable. There's been a couple things on the web here that have questioned whether 8 procs are overkill. You know, does it really make a difference to get 8 procs right now? One of the things that the guys that were testing it brought up was that they couldn't they couldn't actually max out the 8 cores. These are the guys that were testing on the Mac Pro, and that's not a good. That's not good that they can't max them out. It means that the system around them can't give them enough information at one time.
I'm worried about things like, are the buses to and from all those processors wide enough? But yeah, you're right, Alex. The software isn't there yet. I'm running Pro Tools, which is the biggest application I use on my computer. And Pro Tools is not able to take advantage of the processors I have, let alone the ones coming down the road. I'm sure this stuff will all be rewritten to take advantage of multiple processors and multi-threading and all that. But very few programs today truly take advantage of it. And then we do have to ask the question, maybe Chris's gang over there at Macworld has done some testing, but you know, are these buses wide enough to handle 8, 16, 32 processors?
Well, I think what we're looking for really is software. You know, sure, the hardware is important, but as you say, if the operating system isn't optimized to take care of this stuff, nor are the applications, then you've got a lot of processors sitting around twiddling their thumbs. And that's another reason why I see this, the synchronicity of this happening when the operating system can take advantage of it, when Apple's had a chance to take Aperture and Final Cut and those really processor-intensive applications and do something with them so they can show off the hardware to its best advantage. I mean, currently, what's the point? And Pro Tools, you know, I mean, you can wait forever because Digi is not, you know, the fastest company in the world at getting its applications up and running with current technology. But you do want to look at maybe Adobe, which is maybe not a good example, but certainly Apple stuff to see that it's going to take advantage of that.
Well, now, wait a minute. Digi has been optimized to run with OS 10.0.0. So come on, Chris.
Yeah, they're getting there by gum. And, you know, once they stop buying companies and spend a little more time developing their software, then they're really going to be there.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens. I mean, this is always what happens when you get on the top of the heap. It's easier to take your time and do what you need to do because you don't have the competition that you need to kind of prod you along a little bit. So now Adobe, not only are they taking advantage of Apple's new hardware, they're only supporting it with their new software, Soundbooth. Is it Soundbooth? Is that right?
That's correct.
Soundbooth was released. The beta was released this week. And now, has anyone played with Soundbooth yet? Has anyone doodled about it?
I have a little bit. Yeah.
It's actually a fairly interesting little application. It's not a replacement for Audition or Soundtrack. It's a much lower level type of thing, really designed for people who don't do a lot of professional audio. So a lot of the stuff is kind of automatic, but it does have, you know, some of the features in Audition that are really interesting. It has the color spectral view, the ability to select sound in the color spectral view and delete it, which is something that Soundtrack we all wish Soundtrack had. The hoobity ha, I mean, this is Mac and Windows, but the hoobity ha is that they're only supporting Intel. Do you think that's a good idea? The Intel chips is what I mean. They're not supporting PowerPC at all. Chris, do you think that was a good process for Adobe? Why did they do that?
Well, they have essentially turned around and said, as far as Apple is concerned, the PowerPC processor is dead to them, and they claim they're following Apple's lead. And if you look in the blog of some of the people developing this stuff, they're saying, look, this is the future. Intel is where Apple is at. That's where we're going forward. We don't need to spend a lot of our time going back and making this compatible with older machines because we want to get this out. We want to get it working, and we know you want us to get this working as well, as evidenced by other Adobe products that we're still waiting for native compatibility for the Intel processor. So I think their decision to do it is perfectly okay. On the other hand, you have people that are in this business who are audio engineers, and audio engineers are closely linked to musicians. And as everybody knows, these people are starving to death and don't have a lot of money and don't have a lot of new equipment. So unless you're, you know, at the Alex Lindsay level where you're constantly buying new gear every other day, a lot of these guys are working in studios and they've got the old stuff. You know, they're lucky to have a G5. A lot of them are still working on equipment that's older than that. And for them, the PowerPC is a must. Fortunately, this isn't a must-have application. There are plenty of other things on the Macintosh already that can do much of what this is doing. If you want more powerful audio programs, they're out there. Some of the capabilities that are in this can be found by combining another couple of programs. So it's not a must-have application, but I understand their argument that, like, look, for us, we really do need PowerPC compatibility.
Especially when you're looking at something that didn't exist before. They're not making anybody upset, so to speak. They are, you know, and since it's in beta, it really, by the time it becomes mature, if we look at Lightroom as a indicator, by the time it actually gets out of beta, you know, it's going to be really 80% of their market, I think, is going to be largely in using in some kind of Intel, you know, machine. So it, of the people who I think would be most likely to buy it, I think that what I'm excited about, I know, is that I go back and forth. I use Soundtrack primarily for post, but there's a couple little features in one specific feature, and that's being able to select certain things in the spectral view and get rid of them. So if I've got a fan up at 18 kilohertz, you know, up at 18K, and I want to, if I want to take that out, I can select that in Audition and just simply delete it. And I can do the same thing with Sound Booth. The big problem has been is I've had to go back through Boot Camp and go over to Audition and do this and then bring it back into Soundtrack if I really wanted to do the work, because Soundtrack doesn't have that feature. Which, by the way, Boot Camp was upgraded this week. Are you guys using Boot Camp at all?
No.
Not at all.
Absolutely not.
I've used it a little bit. It's fine.
If I wanted to have viruses and spyware and blue screens of death, I would buy a $400 Windows machine.
I want access to those viruses.
I thought the Sound Booth was kind of an odd little app. I mean, I play with it a little bit, and as somebody who's spending a little bit more time doing audio stuff, I'm always kind of looking for what's out there. But I found it kind of confusing in a couple ways. I mean, the one thing that I really liked about it is something that it seemed to do well that other audio apps don't do well, is to expose in, if you will, layman's terms, the kinds of little tasks that we need to do with audio, right? I mean, again, let's go back to the way we talked about Photoshop and, you know, how Photoshop is so far beyond 80/20 in terms of the features that you use. I mean, you almost want an app that just kind of does those 15 things that you need. Sound Booth, you know, exposes this way of saying, hey, here's the way to take out pops. You just use this little tool. And, you know, I've played with, gosh, now I play with Amadeus 2, I played with Sound Studio, I played with Fission, I played with so many of these apps, and they're all good, and they all support all these plugins, but they don't make it, you know, necessarily the most human language. And I think that's one interesting thing that they seem to be trying to do inside of that incredibly odd interface that they have, is to expose that stuff to the average user.
I'm with you on the odd interface, though, because I'm accustomed to using audio editors. I feel right at home when I open something like Amadeus or Fission.
You know where stuff is.
Exactly. It's like, oh, that's a waveform. I get it. Oh, there's that. There's it. Okay. But I open up the Adobe thing and I go, what?
Yeah.
What is that?
It seemed like something that I would just have to really kind of relearn from the bottom up. And because my attention span is not good, I ended up just kind of putting it away. But, you know. I'm not sure who it's targeted at. I mean, I hear what you're saying, Alex, about all that spectral stuff. That's all pops and buzzes to me. I have no idea what that means. But the, you know, just that basic functionality, I'd love to see stuff like that come into like kind of a lower end app.
Well, I think that what I'm using it for is something actually probably fairly esoteric given the rest of the app. The app there is, for the most part, is really designed for people who don't do any audio. You know, they're an editor, and it's amazing how many times I'll talk to an editor and I'll say, why don't you compress that audio a little bit? And they're like, well, I'll just compress it when I, you know, make it ready for the web. And I'm like, well, that's not what I mean. You know, we're talking about audio compression here. You know, we need to reduce the contrast between the highs and the lows of the volume. And this is something that for instance, Sound Booth makes fairly. It's fairly easy. I have to admit, I'm kind of particular about that kind of thing, and I want more control than I'm getting.
I wish it would do something a little bit more like, what's that program? Audio Hijack. Where Audio Hijack, if you're a guitar player and you're used to the metaphor of your effects boxes being in a row, you know, you understand what happens. You know, you want to put your digital delay after your distortion, for example. And so I think with like something like Hijack, if you guys have ever used that, you kind of drag and drop the things that you want to do and then you have controls inside of each of those little boxes. And that's a metaphor that I would find really valuable. That I don't know. It just seemed like this was a pretty complicated interface for something that it seemed like a pretty simple app in a lot of ways. I don't know.
Let me jump in here and say that if you're using Soundflower, you cannot use Soundbooth.
You can't
Soundflower
use
captures the like the beeps and buzzes of your Mac. Is that
what happens? Is Soundbooth just crashes on open?
Really?
Yeah, there's a bug already in the beta that they found that there's a process that Soundflower tries to use that makes Soundbooth crash. So as of yesterday, I still have not been able to open Soundbooth because I am not going to disable Soundflower in order to do it.
Okay, well that's I have so many different computers that I have this stuff floating around on. I guess I don't have I have Soundflower I guess on one of my laptops, but I don't have it on the one that I was testing it on. Now, another big thing in the news here, Apple is rumored to have a deal with Singular. I guess this is probably the big news of the week. This is the Apple Singular deal. People say is coming. People says, you know, this, once again, this is kind of pushing us towards, is there an iPhone? Most
yes!
of us. Yeah.
Yes, there's an iPhone. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I can't. You know, the problem now is even if Apple wasn't designing an iPhone, I think that everyone's going to be pretty disappointed at Macworld if we don't get one. You know, it's Apple would almost have to come out and just tell everyone over and over and over again right now that we're not going to.
Listen, Alex, it's no problem. I'm going to stand there with a gun on Chris and tell Steve that if there's no iPhone, Chris gets it.
Yeah, well, there'll be no iPhone then, will there? Go ahead.
The only thing worse than being shot is being Steved.
Yeah, so the
Steved once, didn't you, Alex?
I have been Steved, and it was very painful. So the I prefer not to be Steved again. So so it looks like it's coming. You know, it feels like it's coming. Now the other thing that came out this week that may or may not be connected to it is this are some of the patents that Apple has applies for a long time. It's not like they just put them out. I think a lot of people, when they see these patents, think that Apple, you know, put this in for patent release. But a lot of times this stuff sits. Scott, can you kind of explain a little bit about the patent process of how long this stuff takes to go through?
Yeah, they have to apply for patents early because there's more and more searches required these days because it's more complicated. But, you know, Apple has been known to patent things just to keep other people from getting to it. That's a pretty traditional intellectual property technique. But I do think that the flurry of patents, we've now counted six, I believe, related to the iPhone or a potential iPhone. I think it's enough positive momentum to believe it's true. I do want to also mention that we actually already talked about this Singular deal. It was actually broken about 5-6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I think what's happened is it's now just come fuller to reality. It was a discussion 5 or 6 weeks ago. Now I think they may have even signed contracts. So if you look at that and you look at all the other stuff we're hearing, and the other reason I think it's true is that it hasn't appeared on Think Secret yet. Because, you know, if it's on Think Secret, it's generally not true. I'm sitting here holding my second gen Shuffle, which according to Think Secret won't be shipping until November. And, you know, they were also the people that told us Aperture was out of business. So they haven't made such a prediction yet. So therefore, I believe very firmly the iPhone is coming.
It is November in Australia. So, you know, maybe you just got their summer Southern Hemisphere edition.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very excited actually about getting the Nano. Now, you ordered the Nano online?
No, I got the Shuffle.
The Shuffle.
The little teeny little one.
No, that's actually what I'm looking forward to. But I guess they every day I go over the Apple Store. And now it's not like I travel somewhere. The Apple Store in San Francisco is like 100 feet from our office. So when I go to lunch, oftentimes I wander through and I look longingly at much of the hardware. And one of the things I keep on asking for is when is the Shuffle going to show up? And they're like, well, we don't even know. So
I got mine today. And by the way, in case you all haven't noticed it yet, iTunes 7.0.2 has been released today, and that adds Shuffle support.
Right. So so it's going to be. I'm actually pretty excited about it. I mean, I'm mostly just getting one for as a workout, you know, workout iPod. Given that I lost my other iPod last night. So
you lost it last night?
I lost it at the gym. I left it somewhere.
You know what you need to do, Alex?
It was an old one, though. You take old ones.
You need to put a GPS locator on your iPod, and then you can use your TomTom to find it.
I really do. I have lost. I have now lost 3 iPods at the gym.
Maybe they'll give you some kind of a volume discount.
I know.
The 6-packs.
Well, they're always the ones I use in the gym. I work out pretty hard, so the ones that I use at the gym are usually the oldest ones I have. You know, and so that, like, I had a 5 gig one that I was using until like a year ago, and you know, like one of the generation ones that I was still surprised
it was
still alive.
Just incorporate that into your workout. Just account for the extra 10 pounds.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that I think I can hang on to the little Nano. That's my shuffle. I think I can hang on to that one. I think it'll be easier.
The thing is very, very small.
Yeah, so I'm excited.
And it does clip to you, so.
I do have to admit that that I think that, you know, when they say that they've sold, you know, they talk about how the market, I saw this report where they said the market can't get much bigger. I mean, Apple sold 40 million iPods this year, but the market can't get that much larger. And I don't think they're realizing that a lot of us just keep on buying all of them. You know, I right now with Envision, I have like 3 iPods sitting on my desk. You know, I think there's some of us that just keep on, you know, slowly collecting iPods, you know,
because iPods are going to go through the wash anyway. So you're going to have to buy a new one.
With the shuffle. Absolutely.
They do because they clip to your clothing. So, of course, they're going to go through the wash.
Yeah.
I got mine to use in my car because, the big one takes up just no convenient place on the dash to lay it. So the little small one perfectly happens to clip to a little thing on my dashboard, and that's the reason I bought it.
If I may introduce just a note of reality here, I mean, we've talked about the 1G iPod and these things being so big. I mean, can we think back to about 7 years ago when we were carrying Walkman about the size of our heads and that, you know, held like 30 minutes of music? And now we go, oh, yeah, well, that only held 1,000 songs, you know.
I had a creative jukebox. That, having said that, I think it was 6 gigs, but this is maybe 1999 or 2000, and it weighed about as much as a chimp, but it did hold a lot of music. But, I mean, serious, the thing was like, it was huge. It was like carrying a tire around.
Yeah,
you know, you're absolutely right. We get spoiled fast.
Although I will say, from a
business standpoint, the thing that kind of amazes me, I'm sure you guys have seen this, but, in San Francisco, I noticed this around Christmas last year, our Macy's got one of those big Snapple machines that spits out Apple products. Have you guys seen those? It's a big vending machine.
I saw one at the Portable Media Expo had one.
That's right. We saw one in Ontario, California at the convention center, Alex, and it had all kinds of stuff.
And I have to say that I Ontario, California was not where I expected to go to find a high-tech vending machine. You know, that's not the first place that would have popped into my head. But
to me, that's the thing to watch is, I mean, just from my consumer standpoint is, you know, who would have thought in 1983 when we were saving up to buy our Marillion CDs that you would eventually be able to go to Walgreens and pick up a shrink wrap CD player for whatever, 30 or 50 bucks. And I think that's what's really interesting to watch as the prices start dropping on this stuff, you know, in the next few years. And just back to this point of Apple and the sales, you know, we don't buy one iPod. If you're like my household and you're, you know, a couple of dorks, you've got like 4. And, you know, setting aside people like Karl Lagerfeld, who reportedly have, how many does Karl Lagerfeld have? Have you guys ever seen that? He actually had special boxes made so he can carry around he has these whole like lunch boxes full of iPods with like a bajillion songs on all of these. It's like an array of iPods. So, and he has them at all his different houses.
You know, I've often thought of building an iPod raid. Just to see what kind of bandwidth I can get.
That's what I think the trajectory that's interesting to watch is as this becomes less of something that's like a, you know, it's less like buying a new car and, you know, and more like, I don't know, replacing a shirt in some ways.
It is going to grow to the point of being a commodity, in my opinion, because it's going to be much like the razors and the razor blades. Eventually, the real money is going to be in the songs, not the players, and we'll see the cost of the players come down, the size of the players come down. We'll see probably the cost of the songs go up if the music companies have their way. And you're right. I mean, I own 4 iPods right now.
It's also interesting to think, you know, we've gone around on this one 3 or 4 times too, and I've whined about it, but the whole thing of not having an easy way to re-download your library or to have it accessible from multiple places, to me that's a model that starts looking more attractive is you say, okay, well, I lost this iPod, but, you know, as soon as I go wheels down in New York, I can pick up a new one and pick all my music up off of, you know, T1 line at the hotel. You know what I mean?
That's actually, that'd be great.
Yeah, I mean, but like, again, that's the labels that are holding it up. So, you know, boo-hoo.
So the also in the news, this comes up every time Apple puts a new release out, is that of course someone announces that they got that new release to work on a regular PC. So Apple has been, Apple will put out something now they're showing it running, the x86. So one of the interesting things about this, one of the more recent ones that has been put up, is that it actually. The kernel coder, a guy named Semthex, that's the code name, Semthex, posted this that he says is entirely legal. This is actually running without the trusted platform module. So what he did is he actually launched it. Now, you don't get any of the GUI. You just get the back end. You get the OS 10, everything except for the GUI. But it's running on the OS X. It's running OS X essentially, but without the front end. Which is useful if you're a researcher. Not as useful if you're a regular person that actually wants to use, a GUI. But there's also a lot of people, constantly cracking it. Does this mean anything to Apple? Do you think Apple really cares that people are cracking OS X and putting it on a regular PC? No one knows. No one
Not
cares.
In this form. I mean, nobody cares in this form.
Right.
The whole attraction of OS X is having OS X like it's supposed to look, with a smiley face, and it's very friendly, and that's why we like it.
Right.
Because otherwise, run Unix, and you've got all that command line stuff, and have a wonderful time, and good on you.
Yeah, I mean, there seems to be this thing that people think that they're going to crack. Somehow they're going to just keep on cracking OS X, and they're going to put it on a PC, and somehow that's going to force Apple to adopt... the licensing of their operating system, but most people, I think, who buy a Mac, I mean, the reason they're buying it is so they don't have to fiddle with all that stuff.
Well, I think also you just end up on this merry-go-round that it's like the situation with DVD John and Apple's DRM.
Right.
You come out with something, you crack it, you make it work on something it's not supposed to, and then Apple says, oh, okay, and they turn a switch, and then it doesn't work anymore, and then you go back to the lab, and you break it again, and then Apple turns another switch, and they break it again, and it's just, I think it's a hobby if you've got nothing else to do in your life, but I think for practical uses, I certainly wouldn't want to be the consumer that was depending on somebody's scheme to get around something that Apple's doing, because it's very clear that Apple doesn't care to share certain things with the rest of the world. iTunes DRM being one and OS X being the other.
Yeah, and I think that this always brings up this conversation that I hope I'm not incorrect here, but I believe it was the Gartner Group that once again said that I think in a conference last week they said that they thought that Apple should. Once again, they said Apple should release, they should just forget about the hardware, they should just license the software, make it available to everyone, and that would be good for Apple. My argument has always been that why it's a good experience is partially because you have control over it, all the aspects of what you're dealing with. Should Apple think about licensing out their operating system?
I don't think so, because every poll we've taken, every investigation we've looked into this stuff says people like it that Apple's a closed system. They like the way Apple does business. There's a certain special clique or group or club or whatever that we all belong to that use Apple's. And I think that there's much more likelihood that we'll see more development in the way of Windows users trying to run the Apple OS, backwards, more likelihood of Windows trying to be put over on the Apple computing system rather than the Windows people trying to use the Apple OS. It's just, I don't think there's that big a market. Do you, Chris?
I don't think so. And I think you're right about people preferring it the way it is. Back in the old clone days, yes, I liked having a power computing machine that was less expensive than an Apple computer and more powerful. But I also liked the relationship between the iPod and iTunes and the relationship between Apple's hardware and OS X, because Apple controls everything and they work seamlessly together. And you don't get that kind of experience on a Windows box.
That's why we don't have viruses, and that's why we don't have spyware, and that's why we don't have all those problems.
Well, I was talking to a developer, this is a while ago, and they were talking about their development process. And they say, well, when we develop for a Mac, we've got like three different machines. We've got to make sure it runs on all of those. When we develop for PC, there's they had I think they had 27 machines that they had to test their software against, you know, to make sure that it actually worked. Because there's all these different configurations, all those different, all these different ways that, you know, all these different cards, all these different drivers, all these things, you know, that they had to make sure that it all worked. And it was just even for a developer, it was much more complicated, you know, to keep all of that stuff running. But that's why a lot of stuff is a little less, oftentimes less stable in that area.
I don't see how that would be any interesting anywhere beyond like a parlor trick. I mean, you know, it's fun if you can make that work, and that's kind of a hobbyist thing. It's kind of cool, but I mean, I guess I just don't understand. I mean, on a PC, is the idea here that someone's saying we want to be able to, whatever you call it, crack OS X so that it can run on a PC because we don't want to buy a Mac because it's too expensive. Is that the idea?
That's the theory. But the thing is that once you start, and this has been, people have done this over and over again, once you start actually adding up, when you look at what you're getting with a given Mac, and what you would, and when you built a PC up to that same level, oftentimes, unless you're building it yourself, oftentimes that price is going to be the same or more.
Yeah, I mean, the buttons aren't hooked up to anything. I mean, you might as well, you know, draw a Mac on a cardboard box, right? I mean, I'm not sure. I never had one of the power computing ones. I've always had Macs, but I don't think there's any. Speaking of someone who has no idea how Apple makes these kinds of decisions, but I can't imagine that would be anything that they would think about at this point. It seems to me the play they're making is saying that, you know, call it a click or call it whatever. I think what they're saying is there's a substantially different experience to doing this that you may or may not like, but if you do like it, then you're going to want all this stuff to work together.
Yeah.
And you can do that reliably on a Mac. And it's, you know, the thing is, let's not be ridiculous about it. It's not impossible to do on Windows, but it's not something that's, you know, it just from what I hear from reports from people, it's not as easy. But, you know.
This whole line of questioning is making me queasy.
Well, let's jump into, there's another rumor that's floating around. Once again, now every year we have to have this rumor start up in about October, November, you have to have the 50-inch Apple monitor rumor. I think it's like required that we're gonna get our big 50-inch HD display that is and the idea here, I think this is from Gizmodo, put this up this week, the issue is that is Apple going to build this super display? I mean, they have a 30-inch. A 50-inch is really, what that is not so much a new monitor. It's really just a TV, you know, an LCD display that happens to also have an input that you can run your computer to. And the question is as Apple develops iTV, as they develop, you know, all of this integration, why wouldn't they make it easier for you to just integrate directly to the, you know, to a monitor that they built, close the system all the way down?
I'm doing that now on my 42-inch plasma, and that's too big. I've got a Mac Mini connected to my Panasonic 42-inch plasma. And it's great for watching movies through the DVD player. But if I try to operate the Mac, if I'm sitting within wired distance, I'm too close. And if I sit across the room, it's just creepy. So, yeah, I mean, yes, for editing movies makes sense. Yeah, you can edit. Like, this is how people are going to see it. But for everyday sort of use, I don't want to surf the web on a 50-inch plasma display. It's just too much.
I agree. I tried looking at Chris's television. I emailed him and said, what did you buy? And I went down and looked at one and I thought, this is just too big. And as somebody who enjoys having the largest of everything, even for me to say it's too big, it must really be too big. So I also think that people need to understand the technology behind doing a 50-inch display versus a 30. It's not exactly one of those 2-to-1 metrics. It's like 100 times harder.
Mm-hmm. Merlin, can you imagine?
The only reason I can think of that, I mean, yeah, personally, I couldn't use a 50-inch monitor. I would feel really ridiculous if I had a monitor that big, especially for what it would inevitably cost. But I'll tell you where it would look kind of cool is in an Apple store. It's the kind of thing where, you know, people walk in and they go, holy crap, like they don't have that over at the CompUSA or whatever. So, I mean, there would definitely be some wow factor to it, but I think it's probably safe for you to put that back into the annual rumor bin.
Now, I actually have an 80-inch monitor that I use occasionally.
Where do you keep that?
I keep it on my wall with a projector. Yeah.
Oh, really?
So I I will, when doing certain kinds of work or when I feel like relaxed, I actually have a projector in my office. We have two. We have a backup projector for our main one that we do presentations with. So you always have to have one if you're doing seminars. So if it goes bad, you can swap it out.
Are you being serious?
Yeah, yeah. So I have a backup projector that sits in my office that we don't use very often. I'm not allowed to use it that often because we can't blow out the bulb or anything because it's the backup. So occasionally when I'm doing work or I feel like watching Lost on a big screen, I will, I just fire up the projector and hit play. And a couple days ago, I was actually playing with this program called Silhouette Effects, and it's a roto tool. It does rotoscoping, and you draw these little lines around everybody on every frame. And so I was testing it, and I was like, man, this is just a pain in the neck. I'm crouched over looking at my monitor. And so I put it up on the projector. It was awesome. It was awesome because you have to pay attention to all these little details, and it was great to have this massive screen. So that's why I got excited about the possibility of 50-inch. I could actually live into that possibility. So
and that's why the slogan that they're going for is large screens for lonely men.
Ow.
Because, you know, you got to think about, should I get the kids' diapers or should I get the 80-inch screen?
I just want to say that last exchange, Chris, one time you accused me of being a geek. I think you have to say that while I may be a geek, I am a mini geek compared to Alex.
This is part of his stock and trade, though. I mean,
he wins, because he writes all this stuff off. So he's okay with it.
Also, people give him stuff.
A lot of people send me lots of stuff. My current favorite thing that showed up at the office was this. Scott, did you see the M station?
I did it, and I know how it quote unquote showed up at the office. You begged for it at the portable media.
It is so.
I was there while you were shamelessly begging for it in the room,
and it came. It came, and I love it.
You guys should have seen this. Alex was down on both knees, crying and weeping. He was speaking in Afrikaans. He was so desperate.
I'm lucky to get a free donut.
I was not speaking in Afrikaans. That's all I have to say. So no,
that was the only other part of that story that wasn't true.
No, so you got to get it. The guys make a little bit of fun of me, here in the office because there's this M Station makes this tower. I don't know. I mean, it's like this thing that's like 3 or 4 feet high.
Logan's Run. It looks like something from Logan's Run.
It doesn't look quite as refined as you'd expect from like an MP3 player. The whole thing is just designed to work with your iPod, and it's not the prettiest thing in the world, but the sound, it's the cleanest sound I've heard since I got rid of my Polk speakers, on some traveling thing. And it's like $300.
I have to admit, it does sound very, very good.
Oh my gosh! And I just have it. I just listen to it all the time in my office, and so I'm anyway. That's that, and the other thing that I just got was the Bodolin. Have you seen this boat on this little USB microscope? Or it's like this. Anyway, I'll post pictures.
Yes.
You guys can check it out. Anyway,
We need to back up on this one moment, though, because there's a disturbing trend here.
Yes.
You see, I was standing next to you when you were begging for this, and you obviously forgot the old saying, if you can get one, get two.
No, I actually have.
I'm sitting here and I don't have my tower.
I'll send you a ball. I have the ball. Okay. I have it. I'll get you a ball, and you can put that in your office and decide if you like that.
Thank
you. Yeah, no
problem.
Thank you. So have you guys seen this? Did you see this was posted, the 10 apps that every new Mac user should download? Did you see that?
Yeah, I did see that. Was that on?
Did you agree with it?
I saw that.
It was on the list. So here's the ones, and you guys can tell me whether you believe that these are the top 10. Now, a lot of these, I think the rule was these are free apps. They're not shareware. They're not demos.
Is that the one that starts? It starts with Adium.
Yeah.
That list? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Adium or Adium or whatever you call that. Now, does anyone use Adium or Adium? No.
I do.
So there's Adium, and what it is it's an instant, it's a versatile.
You guys using iChat? You other guys?
I use iChat.
I use iChat as well.
I occasionally use iChat. I have this problem that everyone talks to me when I'm on iChat. So usually you'll see me pop up for like 25 seconds looking for somebody. Like I'll pop up and I'll kind of look around a little bit, and then I don't see the person I'm looking for, and then I disappear again.
In fact, a little Periscope thing comes up on my iChat when you're on iChat.
Yeah, yeah. I usually.
Now, Merlin, can you swap files over Adium?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. And it also has. It has encryption, and it's got a metric ass load of plugins that do all kinds of little different things.
Did you say a metric ass load?
metric acid.
Is that a technical term?
Yeah, I mean, up until the late 70s, it was an imperial ass load.
And oh.
Then after we switched over to metric.
Did we?
Know, we did. We switched over.
I thought just during that, Carter for like 10 minutes or so did, and then we said no, and we went back.
He's telling us to turn down our heat.
Well, we were really going to a metric ass load, and then over the last 8 years, we've really moved back to an imperial ass load. So.
It's like a lot of those little kind of open source apps, it thrives on the extensibility. So if you kind of think Firefox for chat, right. Maybe. And so there's a lot of little neat plugins and, I like it. It's not, again, like it doesn't work, you know, with all the kind of out of the box whizziness that iChat does, but it's very pretty and it feels more configurable to me. Actually feels more OS X like, I've got to say, than iChat does. It took you off. Go ahead.
Next one on the list is CyberDuck. This is an FTP client.
I'm a Transmit man.
I use Transmit.
You know, Transmit.
I use CyberDuck for secure FTP.
Transmit does that just
fine. Yeah, Transmit's not free, but I use it for everything. I can't imagine using anything else other than Transmit.
Has something that I'm not sure.
It's got love, is what Transmit. It's got.
Well, here's something I'm not sure a lot of folks know Transmit does. Do you guys use the DocSend functionality?
I do not.
Well, let me tell you about DocSend. DocSend is the ability for me to go in and say, okay, here is the, I have a favorite. So I've bookmarked basically an FTP subfolder on a web server. And I associate that with, I also bookmark a local directory. And if you can think of it this way, if I open up the Finder directory that's associated with my FTP directory and I drop any file under the Transmit icon, that's all I need to do for it to upload right to that directory.
Wow.
And it works with Quicksilver too.
My brain is now oozing out of my ear.
Well, that's this is, I'm just thinking, like, if I had this in 1995 when I was struggling with what would it be back then, Fetch?
He could have been a contender.
I could have been a contender. I could have been like Jason Fried. You start talking about the apps and you get me excited. But I've never used CyberDuck.
I'm sure it's cool. And if you need something that's free, I mean, I have to admit that a lot of times when I get on a computer, I just open up the terminal and I'm very accustomed to a Unix shell. So I'll just open up the terminal and just do, you know, SFTP, AB, you know, ALIS.
Well, and that's why Transmit is such a great app for anybody who likes GUI and who likes the way a Mac works. There's so much to it that's just sublime. And the ability to edit on the server is fantastic.
And really,
any file, hit Command J, and it opens right up in TextMate or whatever.
And all the panic software
is just really nifty. Sublime.
Now, the next one on the list is Firefox. Does anyone use anything other than Firefox?
I do. I use Camino.
Oh, okay. There you go. I don't know why you. What makes Camino special? Other than
Camino,
you're different.
Very Mac-y.
Oh, is it?
Well, it's very Mac-y, yet it's 100% standards compliant, and you can open pages of Camino from Windows servers that you cannot open in any other browser. Chris, what do you use?
I usually use Firefox. I like Firefox too, but every once in a while I jump back to Safari because Safari's pretty fast. And sometimes I've got enough stuff plugged into Firefox that it slows down. So when I need to do something very quickly, I use Safari.
I use the only thing I use Safari for is that the way it sets up the RSS lists, you know, that I can grab. I have mm-hmm. you know, 25 feeds, and I'll say just you know, give them to me in one long list, sorted by, you know, chronologically, and I can just see all the new stuff that's coming out. And I can't do that in Firefox. And so it's that's the only thing I use Safari.
Well, Safari, I mean, like, this is something somebody like John Hicks could talk a lot smarter about. But out of the box, Safari is, you know, kind of B-. But if you add Saft, Safari Stand.
Yep.
And Pith Helmet, you've got a stew going. That's serious.
What are those?
Stuff like,
what are you
and I use
about?
All that stuff.
Oh my gosh.
It does everything. I mean, you're blocking out pop-ups. And,
back up. So say this again,
give you a couple
Merlin.
Quickies.
One at a time.
One is called Saft, S-A-F-T.
What's Saft do?
You know what's so funny? I use these so much, I'm not even sure which does each.
Which is doing what? Yeah, you got three of them going.
Called Firefox syndrome, where you're complaining to webmasters about something, and it turns out it's a plugin and a grease monkey script you're using.
Yeah.
But like, for example, you can install, I think this is part of Safari Stand, but you know the little pulser, that little location up in the upper right of your browser where you've got, like, you know, you used to be where your little Mozilla would pulse. You'd see the little Mozilla. You can click on that while you're on a page and copy, or rather paste, sorry, copy out of that as HTML the name and URL of the page that you're on. And if you do a lot of HTML editing, that sounds really trivial, but that saves me so much time every day copying out of that. All kinds of, I mean, the one thing I would recommend to everybody, regardless of what browser you're using, find a way to be able to do keyword searching from your location bar.
So
I use something called SoGoody for that. So for example, any kind of a search where the terms are enclosed in the URL can be turned into an abbreviated search. And you can do that in SAFT, and you can do that in SoGoody. So basically, if I want to do a search on Amazon, I just type AMZN space and then my terms in the location bar and hit enter, and it executes that search. Mm. And I've got about 50 of those for everything from Costco to Walgreens to the local library. I can do all those searches right from the menu bar. Do you use that stuff, Chris?
Yeah, I use some of that stuff. A lot of the stuff I do is just to get rid of stuff I don't want to see anymore. And so you can use SAF for getting rid of animations. Increasingly, we're getting more of these blinking animations. Right. So I want to get rid of that stuff because I don't care about it. And, you know, I work for a company that has lots of advertising and lots of that stuff on it. And I block it out of my own company as well because it's only fair. But nobody else do it, please.
Right. But I mean, actually, I think I'm trying to remember the URL. I'll look this up while you guys are talking. But John Hicks has a whole site about, I think it's called Pimp My Safari, if memory serves. And it's full of great tips if you are using Safari. And again, the nice thing, like, you know, I used to piss and moan about all those Windows users who were, oh, I got to have all my applications work together. But I mean, the beauty is that that's how it works on OS X now. Safari works really well with these other apps. It pulls in URLs from your address book and so on. But
it's cool.
I'll quit ranting. I like Safari. I played with Flock. I think if you're really into the kind of hipster web 2.0 kind of stuff, Flock is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. I'm not that hip.
No, you're not.
I'm not. I'm not.
You got a big TV
guy.
Though.
Yeah, I have a projector, but I don't have it. Well, but I don't have a TV at home. It's kind of a mixture. I have lots of stuff at the office, but I literally most of the time don't bring a laptop home, and I don't have a microwave at home, and I don't have a TV, and I'm very.
You make your own ketchup.
What?
You make your own ketchup?
I don't make my own ketchup, but I have been considering making my own wine.
Really? Next time we get together, we'll talk about lining our own brakes and doing artisanal.
No, I don't.
Rat hole alert.
I prefer not to do anything with a car. So anyway, I backup. Hard drive failures. Does anyone use this? I have to admit, the other ones they mentioned here are Carbon Copy Cloner and Super Duper, and I actually use both of those. Well, someone in the office uses both of those. But
I use iBackup. It works really well.
Doesn't work well? So this is just for backing up your entire, you know, just grabbing the whole system, the whole kit and
caboodle. Yeah, you can do partitions and then do a clean backup, and it works really well, and I even had to restore from it once, and it worked.
The next one
I use ChronoSync, and ChronoSync? It's not free, but it works well.
I use ChronoSync for my library. I do most of my, when I do my backups on my regular Mac, I leave out obviously all the cache stuff, my downloads folder, my iTunes folder, and then like once a week I'll run ChronoSync to sync up my iTunes with my big ass collection on an external drive, and it's so brain dead easy to use.
Yeah.
Does anyone use it in Vue? NVU? This was another one that was listed here.
Is this HTML editor?
Yeah.
I looked at that a while back. It looked pretty cool. Is that an open source HTML editor?
Yeah, that's what it is. And it's supposed to be nifty, but I don't do any of that stuff. So
Text Wrangler, dude, that's all I need.
Yeah. Now this other one, I don't think Merlin likes at all. It's this freeware called Quicksilver something.
Oh my gosh, not
how do you pronounce that?
Yeah. So
I got to tell you, I love using my mouse. I don't see myself doing a lot of stuff with the keyboard, so.
Quicksilver. I keep on watching these episodes that you've done for MacBreak, and I watch it and I go, oh, that looks really cool, but I'm still scared of it. I'm scared of Quicksilver. I'm getting over it. I'm getting closer.
Quicksilver's there to help you.
Every time I look, you know, watch another MacBreak episode,
I try to avoid organized religion, and for that reason, Quicksilver doesn't appeal to me.
It's okay. The religion will find you.
I know. It keeps hunting me down. Get away! Please, I don't want to use it.
I'm working on my first ever screencast right now, which is going to be a demonstration of a combination of Kinkless GTD with Quicksilver and Text Expander. And it's how to be an incredibly lazy and productive by combining those three apps together.
I like that. Yeah, lazy and productive is very
lazy
useful.
Lazy and productive. Yeah.
Next one on the list, of course, is Stuff at Expander. I think just about all of us have that. I mean, I can't imagine not
because
having.
Because we have to.
Yeah, exactly.
I switched. I'm using something else.
What are you using?
I'm using something that I found on the internet, and I'm killing time where I would.
You found it on the internet?
That narrows it right down for us, Merlin.
What did you find?
This is me treading water while Scott makes fun.
I heard that you can go up the internet and you can download things.
Files. Now, which tube are you in, Merlin?
It is called the Unarchiver.
And the Unarchiver.
Placement. Yes. And you can associate your files with that. And it just feels better than the Expander to me.
And or so SIDX.
I don't know. I haven't seen one of those in a while.
Now, I have to admit, my big thing is that I don't understand why when I pass things back and forth to everyone now, I just zip everything. Everything to me is a control.
Gotta zip. That's the thing.
You know, the thing is that the stuff, like today, for instance, I'm trying to upload something to somebody and it came to me as a SIDX. And so I put it up there. But if I double click on that, if I put that into my web page where someone can just click on it and download it, it comes up as garbledygook. It doesn't get handled well by a browser. Now, I could fix my browser to figure that out, but that's not going to help me on their side. So it's easier for me to just get to zip it because I know that when they hit it, it's going to come down.
You got it. I used to try and bzip everything and be a smartass just because it was so, efficient. But, you got to zip. I think that's become the standard.
Yeah, and increasingly people don't have Stuff at Expander anymore because Apple doesn't include it with new machines. So you have to go to the website. You have to give them your email address so they can mail you a password so you can do it. I'm happy to use it. Just make it easy for me to use. I don't want to have to enter stuff and then retrieve an email message to get it later.
Next one on the list, Text Wrangler 2.
Yay!
Well, Chris likes Text Wrangler.
I like everything that those guys do. It's just
that's bare bones, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they make some good stuff. So
I used to use BB Edit, and I paid for BB Edit, but now I use the free Text Wrangler, which shows how messed up I am.
Text Wrangler's Cocoa too, right?
I'm not sure.
Cocoa Crisp.
Yeah, it's Cocoa Crisp. Now, what do you guys use it for?
I use it for building HTML pages because I'm one of them old-fashioned coders that likes to start with a blank page.
Wow.
And I use it for the blogs for Macworld and Playlist. We have to have all that stuff formatted for HTML, and it's easy as pie.
There you go. Next one on the list is VLC, a must-have in my opinion. Are you guys using VLC?
Yeah.
Yep.
Pretty much for those.
And we should tell them what that is.
What VLC is that pretty much anything that isn't, when it's not QuickTime and QuickTime doesn't want to play it, VLC, you're almost guaranteed is going to play it. It's going to play AVIs. It's going to play DivX. It's going to play all these different formats. And so it's an open source player. And it's a really, it's just something you have to have on your, if you're downloading videos off the web that aren't from YouTube and aren't from iTunes, you need to be able to open that, if you need to be able to open
it. Have you tried Nice Player?
I have not tried Nice Player at all.
Nice Player is another, I haven't played with it that much, but the nice thing about VLC, obviously, is it's open source. It handles all these different formats, and it kind of honors these different systems. And Nice Player is kind of even cooler if you're Alex and you're going to actually be watching movies on your Mac. I don't know if this is the exact right phrase for it, but it's like totally Chrome-less. Like what comes up is a big black window. And when you mouse over, you see the controls and it's very easy to jump right into full screen mode or what have you. It has playlists that flip out as a drawer and it does WMVs, which is kind of cool.
There you go. Well, that's definitely probably one to add to this list. And then the final one they had was Windows Media Player.
That shows this is an older list.
Is it an older
list? This list has been around for a long time because Windows Media Player no longer is updated.
Well, it actually says that they were talking about Flip for Mac Now is giving QuickTime support. Yeah, and this list must have been older. I don't know why. What happened was is I digged it. It came up on Dig, which you never know exactly when it's. Oh, this is really old.
I do want to point out that today Microsoft released version 11 of Windows Media Player for the PC. And, they are such innovators over there. One small problem, just like the Zune, it has no podcasting support or podcatcher capability. But, hey, Bill Gates said the internet was a fad when it first came out, so that figures.
But is it brown?
It isn't brown, so it doesn't match the ugliest of the Zunes. But
you guys.
I just think it's silly that they don't have podcasting support. It's just ridiculous.
Well, it's and by that I've been hearing you say that, and I not along here in San Francisco. But when you say that, you mean it doesn't have the iTunes like ability to follow an RSS feed and pull that stuff automatically. Is that what you mean when you say it doesn't support podcasts? That doesn't mean it won't play MP3s. You mean that it doesn't automatically pull them down. Is that correct?
That's correct. It has no pod catcher built in.
Okay.
And just like the Zune has no capability whatsoever to automatically manage podcasts like the iPod does. Which is just one of the reason the Zune is D-U-M-E-D.
Not that you have an opinion about the poor little Zune.
No. I'm just, you know, if there was a way to buy stock in just the Zune, I would sell it short today.
Oh, jeez.
You're going to turn into like the Jeff Foxworthy of the Zune, I think.
I mean, I love all these guys that have gone out and got all these domains, you know, like Zune Intelligence and Zune Insider. And I'm thinking, you know, there's going to be about 13 people hitting those websites 3 weeks from now.
All right. Well, I think we've come to the end of the road. I know that both Scott needs to go, and we're recording here a little earlier than you'll hear it. And also, Chris, you have Halloween duties.
I do. It's trick or treat time.
It's trick or treat time. So,
Alex, I don't have anywhere to be at all.
If you
want to just keep talking,
it'll just be Merlin and I. We're going to go back to talking about something really. You know, we'll find some esoteric.
I was just gonna look at some old photos and weep.
Hey, Chris, are you gonna dress up as a PC, Chris?
No. Okay. I don't want to take any attention away from my daughter. So
okay.
she'll be in costume.
What's your daughter going to be? What's she gonna be?
She's Tinkerbell.
Oh, that's fun.
She's 5 and a half and she's Tinkerbell, and it's very cute.
My son's going out as Indiana Jones.
Oh, that's funny.
I think we even got him a whip.
Wow. You know, gotta start him young.
Giving a 9-year-old boy a whip is a dangerous dangerous thing. But
I have to go downstairs. We're giving out shuffles to the first 200 kids that come.
And Scott's address is.
I hope somebody on where Alex is going gives out eye insurance. Ow, the whip hurts.
All right. So thanks, Chris. Once again, if you want to read a little bit more of what Chris is working on, go to macworld.com. Is that the best place to go?
Favorite apps?
What?
We're not going to do our favorite apps.
Oh, I forgot the favorite apps. What's your favorite app, Merlin?
Well, that's okay. We don't have to.
No, we should. We don't want to mess up the whole thing here. We were getting to the
end of it. Alex, I'm a lazy man, and I get most of my ideas for stories for the show from Dig. And I found this off of a really cool article that I probably won't be able to find immediately. But it's basically, I found that there's a swell article out there about how to prepare your Mac for the possibility that it might be stolen. And it was a bunch of great little tips for hardening your security and installing some security software for making it easier to find. And one of my favorite finds in that, this is one of those like great little Mac applications, just does one dumb little thing, but it's so handy. It's called FreeDMG, and it's available at kellycomputing.net, K-E-L-L-E-Y, computing, one word, .net. And FreeDMG, you can throw it down in your dock, and basically you can grab anything, you know, your files, folders, whatever, drop it onto FreeDMG, and based on, don't yell at me before you hear this, Scott, but so based on your settings, it will on the fly make a DMG for you. And the way that this differs from the typical DMG way is you can set this up to automatically encrypt. In my case, it automatically encrypts, and it automatically makes it a sparse image. So it's just a super fast way to get in the habit of encrypting your stuff and making it real easy and portable. And it's free.
Oh, sorry. Are we done?
Scott.
You don't have to open up Disk Utility.
Okay.
And so it's kind of handy and fast.
Scott, do you have a favorite you'd like
to
share?
Well, you
know,
keep in mind our tradition here is to give either a favorite site or product or a tip, and I'm going to do a tip this week.
Yes.
Good.
And my tip is one that probably everybody, you know, I think this is some super secret tip. But since I only found it yesterday, it's new to me. Chances are if I found it, you know, yesterday, somebody else doesn't know it. So everybody knows how to do a screen capture from their Mac. You know how to do that, right, Chris?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you want to tell everybody how to do that?
Screen capture from your Mac?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just
yeah. You push the button.
Yeah, you push the button. Okay.
Option Command Shift 3.
No. You push F13 because you've mapped it with Snaps Pro.
That's correct. Well, you do have the ability to take a quick screen capture from the OS, but there's a way to do something that doesn't create a screen capture and save the file to your disk. If you hold Control Command Shift 3, then instead of taking that screen capture and making it into a file, you put it into your clipboard, which you can then paste into any old application. So that's my tip of the week. Control Command Shift 3 will do a screen capture and put that puppy right into the clipboard for you.
Does Control Command Shift 4 let you do the select? Because Command Shift 4
will
let you select a certain area and make a file.
You didn't let me finish. I was just about to say, and if you want to add Control Command Shift 4, you get the little cursor to do the select.
Very tasty. Chris, do you have anything to share with us?
I do. I'm going to share the website Rogue Amoeba, and we've talked about some audio hijacking stuff they do, but they do so much great stuff. They've got a new application now called Fission. Mm-hmm. And it is a little audio editor. And what I use it for is if you've recorded an LP or a cassette into your Mac, or you have recorded streaming audio of some kind, it's difficult to parse that stuff up by hand. I mean, you can look through the waveform and do it, but Fission has a really nice way. You can put this long file in like the side of an LP, and it's very smart. So it looks for drops in the audio level as well as blank spots, and it will automatically chop this thing into separate tracks, which you can then export to iTunes. So it's a really easy way to chunk up audio files, and it's a great interface. It's just as simple as can be.
That's awesome. Mine for this time is going to be iStop Motion. Have you guys used iStop Motion at all?
No, do tell.
Oh, okay. So this is made by Boinks Software, but it's just iStopMotion.com. And what it does is you can either hook up a DV camera to your computer, or you can just use your eyesight, and you can do stop motion. So it's basically a screen grab,
but it does
onion skinning. So you can really just see where your object was and where it's going, and you can really build your own little Wallace and Gromit. And my kids, I have to say, are freakishly obsessed with iStop Motion. I mean, they spend weeks, literally, they'll spend weeks working on these animations, and that lasts 2.5 or 3 minutes. But 2.5 or 3 minutes with doing stop motion is quite a thing, and it's got a lot of you can play it back, you can keep on playing it back, you can loop it, you can look at your onion skinning, and then you can just export a QuickTime movie out, and it just does. It's a very Mac program. I don't think it's available on a PC, so it really is this kind of, you know, everything is really designed with the Mac aesthetic, and it's really anyway. I would highly suggest that they've got a free demo that you can download and you can play, and it's definitely worth. It's just a lot of fun. That's gonna be my little tip for the day.
Cool.
So anyway, now back to the close cycle. Chris Breen, MacWorld.com. It's probably the easiest playlist. Is there another one? There's MacWorld playlist.
MacWorld playlist, mag.com.
Okay, there you go. And Scott Bourne, iLifeZone, which is now part of the, it's really up there now. We've been talking about it being up there, but iLifeZone is now part of the Twit network. So we've got, you can go right to twit.tv. To download that, but it's also iLifeZone.com. Is that still there, Scott?
That's going to be there for a couple of more months. And in fact, tomorrow we will have episode number 14 of the iLifeZone at twit.tv and at iLifeZone. Also want to mention my newest blog, which is called podcastgearguy.com. And I do nothing but review podcasting gear there. So check that one out as well.
And Merlin Mann from 43 Folders. Thanks so much for stopping in again, Merlin.
Alex, it's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thanks. That's so sweet. Anyway, I'm Alex Lindsay, I guess. That's my name. And I don't know where I really live. I have too many.
Hey, Alex.
Yeah.
What do you have to pimp?
I don't have anything to pimp. This is Alex Lindsay, and I'd like to have you listen to Mac Break Weekly. That's my. That's
my. You never have before.
We call that a programming note.
No, I mean, you know, if you want to see more of what I do, you can go to pixelcore.com. We train, organize, and prepare people for digital media production. So anyway, that's what I do. And thanks so much for coming. And I guess we'll see you all next week.
Bye.
So long, bye. Suckers.
Yeah, we forgot to do the Windows sucks. So long, suckers.
That did not go well. Our three-way sign-off did not go well.
Chris, we need somebody intelligent like you to help us come up with the real sign-off.
Yeah, we need a real sign-off. We don't have one for this.
So yeah, Chris.
We're
really?
Confused. We're confused.
So f*** off. And thank you for another week of Matt Greek Wakely and eat
We are not going to go here, fellows.
Yeah, I guess I should stop recording.
If you like Mac Break Weekly, don't miss This Week in Media, a weekly rundown of all things media with industry experts. You can find This Week in Media at twit.tv. That's TWIT.TV. Also on iTunes.